Hi, it's Patrick Cox here.
With Nina Porzuki, and this is The World in Words.
Okay, I want to throw a word at you.
Okay.
Folk.
Ooh.
F-O-L-K.
Like folk music?
Sure.
Okay, we listen to some music today? Is that what the podcast is about?
This land is your land, and this land is my land.
All right, listen away.
It's okay. A good word, folk. I like that word.
You like it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it too.
People running through grass, overalls, flowers. I don't know. Banjos.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like a kind of gentler version of the word people. Like old folks' home. It's nicer than old people's home.
Or right.
Folksy.
Folksy. It's a folksier word for people.
It's warm.
Sure. Way warmer than people and far more sort of inclusive.
Right. You feel that you're part of a larger body of people.
This land was made for you and me.
Today's part is all about the word folk, but the German version, which is Volk, V-O-L-K.
Folk.
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 Just a simple sounding, but it really is far, far more complicated in what it implies.
Ich liebe mein Volk.
And the thing with Volk is because German is this language that builds on compound words.
Beautiful compound word language.
Yes, it has literally hundreds of variations where you can add suffixes or prefixes. There are just so many variations.
Volkswagen.
Volkswagen.
The Love Bug from Walt Disney.
What else? Give me some of the combinations.
Okay, here's one. The word for population is Bevölkerung. So
that is very complicated. Wait, say that three times fast, please.
No way. You're testing my German already. These words, all of these variations and the many meanings that they have, they've evolved from the very beginnings of German, from, you know, before the Brothers Grimm, through the Nazi era, through the communist era in East Germany, all the way to today. And at every single juncture, the words have been recycled and to a certain extent redefined.
So my question for you, Patrick, does Volk have the same kind of warm, fuzzy, inclusive feeling in German as Volk does in English?
Well, this is the whole nub of this podcast, because for the people who use this word a lot, yes, it does. It feels about as warm and inclusive as you could possibly get.
Right.
For the people who avoid using Volk, it's anything but inclusive.
Wow. So people actually avoid using this word.
Oh, yeah. People avoid it. And they are arguing over it to this day. You could say that this argument gets to the heart of really what it is to be German. How people see themselves as Germans. It's an argument over the soul of Germany.
So the German election is pretty soon, right?
Right. In 6 days from now, as we speak.
Is this idea, this Volk, and the people who use it and the people who don't, is this an election issue at all?
It's certainly coming up a lot. People are using it in rhetoric or avoiding using it, and not just the word Volk, but also the various variations. And how and whether you use these words is very much a predictor of how you think about all kinds of things, whether it's, you know, immigration, big issue ever since the Germans took in more than 1 million Syrians and other Middle Easterners a couple of years ago. Also of how you may feel about national guilt over the Holocaust. In fact, it's a predictor of how you may vote.
The word Volk, a predictor of how you might vote. Wow. And just to be clear, I mean, this is a big deal election. Speaking of big deals, the German election isn't just, you know, sort of the run of the mill. I mean, after Brexit, after the election of Trump, this like wave of nationalism across Eastern Europe.
Right. I mean, it seems like Angela Merkel is this one sort of beacon of stability right in the center of Europe, right in the center of the free world. And a lot of people are seeing this in those terms. So how Germany votes and how Germany feels about these issues of things like inclusiveness are really key to our futures.
So what exactly then does Volk and its variations have to do with all of this?
Well, let me take you first to the streets of Dresden in the former East Germany.
Ich meine unseren Volksverräter und Lügenminister Demisier.
This is a Pegida rally. You may have heard of Pegida. They made a lot of international headlines about 3 years ago. Pegida is an acronym in German. It stands for Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamicization of the West. They took to the streets of German cities, especially in the former East Germany. They were protesting the massive influx of refugees from the Middle East. And back then, they would regularly attract 30,000 demonstrators. That's no longer the case. But there are rallies most Monday evenings in Dresden. And on the evening that I went there, there were about 2,000 people listening to speakers, singing and marching.
Da macht lasst uns alle streben brüderlich mit Herz und Hand.
Many of the protesters are in their 50s and 60s. They're brandishing right-wing themed flags and T-shirts with all manner of slogans. One guy, he was a local car dealer. He was wearing a Stetson hat and a Donald Trump T-shirt. And among just a handful of them is also some Nazi paraphernalia. Just a handful of them. Like on one woman there, Charlotte Raufuss is her name. She's in her 20s. She's wearing all black with neo-Nazi tattoos and a Wehrmacht T-shirt with the words Heroes for Germany. Charlotte tells me she's wearing this in honor of her grandfather who fought in the Wehrmacht, the Nazi-era army, but has since felt shamed by it. I asked her to define the word Volk.
Ein Volk einfach als eine Gemeinschaft beschreiben, ähnlich wie es meine Vorrednerin schon getan hat.
Volk means a community of the same ethnicity with the same values, she says. So, not immigrants. If two Muslims live in Germany and have a child, she says, that doesn't make the child German. It's like saying that a dog born in a horse stable is a horse. It doesn't make sense. Germany, she tells me, needs to reestablish its purity. Most others, they aren't that extreme when I ask them about the word folk, but they all seem to restrict who belongs and who doesn't. Here's Renata Schneider, a sweet-looking old lady wearing a white lace cardigan.
Das deutsche Volk, das sind laut Definition.
The German folk, she says, are by definition people with the same culture, who speak the same language, who live here within a defined territory. This is the folk. Renata has experience with the word. She's from the city of Leipzig, which in 1989 is where protests began in East Germany that months later led to the downfall of communism. Wir sind das Volk, those protesters chanted. We are the people.
Wir haben 1989.
We went on the streets in 1989, Renata says, for freedom and unity, for German sovereignty. But now, more than 25 years later, we see that Germany isn't sovereign at all. And our leader, Frau Merkel, she represents European and global interests, not German. These protesters, every last one I spoke to, said they'd definitely be voting in the upcoming election, voting for the AfD, the Alternative für Deutschland, the Alternative for Germany. It's a new party that has won seats in state parliaments, but not as yet in the national parliament, the Bundestag. If the opinion polls hold, the AfD has a shot at becoming the third largest political party in Germany. It's been a meteoric rise for the right wing here. After all, the Pegida demonstrations started only in the fall of 2014.
At this time, I did not know what Pegida is. I even did not know how to pronounce correctly its name, Pagode, Pekuta, or something like that.
So this is Werner Patzelt. I spoke to him in Dresden. He's a political science professor at the Technical University of Dresden. And he's considered to be sort of like the go-to guy on the Pegida movement. But like he says, he never even heard of them a couple of, just two or three years ago. Yeah, he started by sending his students to Pegida demonstrations where they would interview the protesters. He figured out pretty quickly after that that the people who were marching, they kind of had a mix of views. Some of them were extremists, no question of doubt. But many of them had much kind of vaguer notions of what they wanted. They just felt like they didn't quite know how they belonged in the new Germany, and they wanted to have more of a sense of belonging, which is why they ended up talking a lot about Volk.
The term Volk is really interesting, because in a democracy, the Volk is the source of legitimate political power. And for good reasons, we have the inscription Dem Deutschen Volke in the front of the Berlin Reichstag.
Yeah, it's true. It's there in big letters on the Reichstag, the German parliament. Dem Deutschen Volke, for the German people.
Okay, but the women that you interviewed at the demonstration, the young woman and the older woman, they actually are not defining Volk in the same way that the Reichstag is using the word.
Yeah, right. I mean, they think of it very much as sort of white German people as opposed to
the people the in general people. Living in Germany.
Yeah, that's it's true. And this is where another key Volk-related term comes in. Patzelt, he thinks of Volk as what he calls an innocent word. But this derivation of Volk, which is Völkisch, he describes this as poisonous, if you can call a word poisonous. So Völkisch, on the face of it, it means national. But most Germans understand it to mean ethnic German. In other words, it's code for white nationalism. And it's not used in polite company. It first became popular back in the 19th century, before Germany was a nation and it had aspirations to becoming a nation. And the German-speaking lands, they were dominated by Napoleon and the French.
This term Völkisch has developed already back in Imperial Germany to a self-description of people who said, well, we are different from these Welsh civilizations, Romantic civilizations. We are true Nordic, true tradition of sound Germanic origins.
And this Völkisch idea of the German Volk, it was related to language and culture, but also to race. So there were German-speaking people spread across many, many different parts of Europe. They didn't yet have a nation, but here was this sense of cohesion.
So my question is, okay, so what was the nature of the cohesion? What bound all of these German peoples together spread all over Europe? Was it language? Was it religion?
It was largely because of the language. I mean, they all spoke this language with different variations of it. There was also religion. They were Christian. There were all kinds of different denominations, but, you know, everybody was Christian. Some people took this then a step further and they made it an ethnic thing. So Jews and the Roma, they became excluded from, they would not be described as Völkisch. And at the same time, all across Europe, not just in Germany, there were a lot of kooky genetic theories kicking around that were kind of exclusionary.
We're talking in the 19th century
here. Still in the 19th century. There were also Darwin's theories, which, you know, survival of the fittest species and all of that, which kind of bolstered this idea in the minds of people who already were predisposed to it, of a superior uber race of people.
And then comes the 20th century and all that comes with it. I think I know where you're going with this.
Yep, we're headed for the Nazis. This is a story about Germany, after all, and German history. And this is where the words Volk and Völkisch really get totally blown up.
So the Nazis picked up this word, Völkisch.
Yeah, the Nazis, as we will hear, went to town with these words. But wait a minute, we just use the N-word. It's the ultimate put-down in Germany to call somebody else a Nazi. I mean, it's bad enough.
Put down anywhere, I think.
It's bad enough anywhere, but it's a million times worse in Germany itself. And there's an awful lot of it. There has been ever since these Pegida marches started. You know, those Pegida supporters, they're just all a bunch of neo-Nazis. Just look at how they use these racist words and buy into these racist concepts around Volk. You know, that's the argument. Walter Patzelt, though, he says that's wrong.
Most of the Pegida demonstrators back in 1516 and today simply do not have the necessary education and the necessary knowledge to use words like Völkisch to understand what Völkisch means. They're simply not trained for these kind of things. They have not the relevant or necessary stocks of knowledge. It's out of their scope. It's as if I would talk about sophisticated instruments of the international financial markets. I know maybe some of the words, but I do not understand what they really mean. And probably I do not even know the proper words for the available instruments. And this is how you have to think about Pegida demonstrators. Simple-minded, very often very narrow-minded, upset persons who are reluctant to think, to reflect about things. They have their feelings, they know about their feelings, they know that they are right, that everybody who disagrees with them is wrong, and so they have to not to enter in arguments with opponents, but have to confess. They are, so to speak, religious believers in their private religion, whatever this may be, and how illiterate they are in, so to speak, religious terms.
I would almost, sorry, excuse me, if I played that piece of tape before you said Pegida, I think a lot of listeners in the United States would think you were talking about Trump supporters.
Yeah, indeed. Pegidians, AFD, Trump supporters, it's very much of the same thing. You would, I guess, not claim that all supporters of Donald Trump are racist fascists and so on. They're narrow-minded nationalists.
Narrow-minded nationalists, huh? I don't know, Patrick. See, the thing about this is I think that's a very easy explanation, and I think it also is a little bit elitist. Because just because they don't know the etymology of the word volkish or what they're saying doesn't mean that they don't know the full like meaning of what you're saying or the nuance that it's a word that is a hot-button word that has certain feelings and connotations associated with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
He's sort of giving them a pass, saying they're too ignorant to know what they're saying. So, you know, they don't really know what they're doing. And I think, you know, they're not dumb. They certainly know what the word means and feels.
Did you come? I mean, you've done a lot of reporting on the alt-right here in the U.S., which, of course, has used neo-Nazi.
They've used like neo-Nazi, well, Nazi slang, like Lügenpresse, and those sorts of words have come out of Richard Spencer's mouth.
So, are there similar arguments here that protesters, if when they're using certain phrases, key phrases, that they don't necessarily know what they saying because they're not sophisticated enough to understand the etymology of some of these words?
Well, I certainly think that many people might not know the etymology, but you can't let people off the hook from using these specific terms because they do know that they like elicit strong feelings and strong emotions. So they knew that they are provocative words. So I don't know. I don't know the etymology of tons of words that I use, but you still know that certain words hold certain power. And when you use them, they evoke a certain way of thinking.
Or are intended to offend.
Right, or intended to offend or exclude. And lots of people use like words for various reasons. So in some ways, the Pegida, you know, might not be fascist or might not be one way or another because, you know, as a media, I think that we paint like sort of a black and white brush on these groups, like it's all or nothing, or they're this way or they're that, because it's easier to tell that story, but it's all very gray.
Well, that is the other message of what the Pat Selt
and that's
has.
What he's saying,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
These people, they don't know what they're saying.
Hold your judgment.
Okay.
There'll be a little bit more on words that some of the people on the street protests are using in the second half. And we'll join some other dots, hear about the Nazis too, and what they did to these folk words after the break.
The World in Words is brought to you by Babbel.
So Tina Toby is here.
Engineer
in the studio.
Tina.
Hi.
Tina, I remember when you, many years ago, moved to Germany, to Berlin for a while.
I did.
Did you learn German?
Nein.
You did not learn German. You know, I think maybe you didn't learn German was because there wasn't an app called Babbel.
On your phone. Oh. Imagine if you had Babbel on your
phone.
Imagine if you had a cell phone.
It was a long time ago. It
would have been so amazing in so many ways.
A lot easier. I think I could have really nailed it had I had Babbel.
Wait a minute. We're going to blame everything on the fact that your phone, your non-existent phone, did not have an app on it called Babbel.
Can you send this to my mom?
Yeah. So,
oh, it's that bad.
Don't be like Tina. If you're going to Germany, download the Babbel app onto your phone.
Yeah.
You get 3 months free if you go to babbel.com/world.
Is that what
enter
it
the
is?
Discount yeah. code world.
You two can learn German. You can be much better than we've been in our pronunciation so far today. And
I know.
I'm gonna get really bad in the second half. In fact, there is one word. I did high school German for 1 year, one full year, after which I gave it up. I'm afraid I gave it up in a big hurry. But I do remember one word, and it's a somewhat strange word to remember. It is bedauerlicherweise. I'm not sure you'd find that like in the opening weeks of your Babel learning experience.
No. What does that mean, Patrick?
It means regrettably. And the reason I learned it was because our teacher had a habit of saying regrettably a lot when he spoke in English. And so we didn't learn anything from him. He wasn't the best of teachers, and we weren't the best of students.
But you did learn this one word.
We looked up this word, and then we would start every sentence, bedauerlicherweise. You probably don't start the sentence with bedauerlicherweise.
That's so mean. You trolled your teacher with German.
We totally did.
Although any good German teacher is probably like, yes, you can troll me all you want.
He was really impressed by the bedauerlicherweise bit, but not by any of the rest of it.
Oh. Babbel.com. Go there. Download the app. Do it.
Okay, back to folk. And back to April 20th, 1933. That was Adolf Hitler's 44th birthday. Hitler and the Nazis had just taken total control of Germany's government. And they were now making moves to control how people thought, how they spoke. Victor Klemperer, he was a German academic, a linguist. He was documenting all of this. He kept a diary throughout the Nazi years, and he was especially focused on the way the Nazis were using words. This was part of his entry for that day, April 20th, 1933. The term Volk, he writes, is now as customary in spoken and written language as salt at table. Everything is spiced with a soupçon of Volk. Volksfest, festival of the people. Volksgenosse, comrade of the people. Volksgemeinschaft, community of the people. Volksnah, one of the people. Volksfremd, alien to the people. Volksentstammt, descended from the people. This was just the beginning of the Nazis' obsession with Volk.
They invented more than 50 words in the period of the Third Reich, more than 50 compounds with Volk.
This is linguist Georg Schuppener.
But you can also say George. It's the same for me.
Okay, George is writing a book on the language of the German right wing. Folk-related words are a big part of it. There were tons of them before the Nazis came along. In the dictionary of the Brothers Grimm, there are 63 rows of Volk compounds recorded. But the Nazis really upped the ante with their inventions.
For example, Volksboden, it's the earth of the people. Völkischer Beobachter, that was a newspaper of the Nazis. Volksbewusst, Volksempfänger, that was a people's radio. So they invented some words, but also they used some words in a new meaning. For example, the word völkisch.
Yeah, that word völkisch, the one that originally was supposed to mean national, but even before the Nazis, had an ethnocentric sense to it. Under Hitler, its meaning got turbocharged into something like purebred Aryan.
Das glaube ich und das weiß ich.
After Hitler's defeat and Germany's humiliation, what happens to all of these words? Words that, as Walter Patzelt said earlier, had been poisoned. Well, what happened depended on which post-war Germany you lived in. In West Germany, the words were shamefully discarded, forever it seemed at the time, discarded for having been associated with Nazism and the Holocaust. But in communist East Germany, some Volk-related words were laundered of their Nazi associations and became battle cries of the working class, the people's this, the people's that. Which brings us to today. Now Germany is reunified and has taken in millions of refugees. And there's another reckoning about...
Who are we as Germans?
Josephine Graef is a researcher at the University of Birmingham in the UK. She thinks words like Völkisch are making a comeback today because people are confused about what it is to be German. And so those on the new right are...
trying to conceive of Germans as a more homogeneous identity than it actually is.
And Völkisch does just that. It conjures up a German identity that is utterly homogeneous. No wonder one of the best-known right-wing politicians, a woman called Frauke Petri, recently suggested in a newspaper interview that Germans should start using Völkisch again, normalizing it. And another Nazi-era word has started trending now.
Volksverräter!
Volksverräter, traitor of the people, used by the Nazis to denounce anyone who questioned them. Here it's used by right-wing protesters to denounce a mainstream politician. Angela Merkel has been branded a Volksverräter many times for her open refugee policy.
Volksverräter suggests that the elite is working against the interest of the German people, so the German people being betrayed.
Patrick, my question for you, this is all rather disturbing, by the way, thanks for bringing this up in the podcast, but who is reintroducing the language? Is it politicians like Frauke Petri who are sort of reinserting Völkisch in these sort of words in a quasi kind of top-down Nazi-era way? Or is this coming from the populace? Is this coming from the internet or the mainstream and like trickling out into the public?
I think it's a bit of both. Yeah, there's certainly evidence that just like with the alt-right here in the United States, the internet and the possibilities that the internet gives for networking, and it's certainly being used a lot. But then there are also a series of influential people like Petri who are throwing out these words.
Mm.
And I went to meet
one of these
people. Yeah, this is a guy who... He's a kind of philosophical high priest of the new right in Germany. His name is Götz Kubitschek. And he lives in a little village in the former East Germany. We actually showed up there unannounced, and he invited us to stay for lunch. Here he is with his family, saying a prayer before eating. It was quite a scene. Three or four of Kubitschek's kids were there at the table. His wife was also there. She's a well-known lifestyle blogger. All the rooms in this grand old farmhouse, they're full of bookcases, books everywhere. It's an intellectual's home. And Kubitschek, he runs a right-wing publishing company right out of the house.
He's sort of like some kind of German Steve Bannon.
Yeah, there's kind of a bit of that about him. But he's not slovenly like Bannon.
Right, because he's German.
Right. He's tall, well-dressed. He has some hipster facial hair. And if you look him up, he's got a finger in just about every right-wing pie in Germany. He takes a lot of these fringe movements and organizations under his wing, and he tries to nurture them. And when he's speaking to you, there's such a contrast between how he sounds, which is really softly spoken, and the harshness of what he says.
Das Volk ist eben auch eine identitäre Gemeinschaft.
Here he is talking about the word Volk. He defines Volk as a community that has a common identity. And the political advantage that he sees in that is that it creates this really strong sense of belonging. You know, with Volk, there's an us, and there are other people, as he puts it, who are not us. So using this word means that you can create, in his mind, political power and also political tension that, as he puts it, may or may not lead to non-peaceful situations.
Wow.
I got the sense that Kubitschek is incredibly frustrated by the taint of Nazism. So I wonder what he took from that, whether it meant that he should temper his own language.
Dass man keine Kompromisse eingeht. Also die
he said, no, you cannot compromise. Not when you're dealing with Germany's mainstream politicians. You can't become part of the establishment. These are people who let in the migrants and the refugees, who told us, he says, not to be proud of our history, who told us not to use the word Volk. And now they're destroying this sense of us that Volk gives us. We need to keep on fighting, he told me, putting our finger in the wound. That kind of stuck with me.
Creating an us and a them. He sounds really rather calculating. I mean, he sounds kind of like a politician.
I think the way that he views it is, if Nazism hadn't taken place, then it would be legitimate to think of the German people as das Volk, to have this really strong sense of German identity, and it just wouldn't be tainted by Nazism.
So it gets in the way.
It gets in the way of his political ambitions.
Wow. So speaking of political ambitions, the election is this coming weekend. And AfD, the Alternative für Deutschland.
The right-wing party.
Yeah, the right, or Alternative for Germany party is looking pretty promising for a newly created party. They might become the third largest party in Germany. That's what you said earlier.
Yeah, yeah. That's what the opinion polls are suggesting. But we should also remember that the becoming the number three party does not mean power. You know, this is a poll, and
right.
polls messed up with Trump and
for
Brexit,
sure.
So we have to be really careful here. But number three equals 11% right now in the polls. And Angela Merkel's party is way out in front of that.
Okay, so we've heard Angela Merkel being criticized throughout. You know, she's too Europe-facing, all these other things. But what exactly, drilling down, when you spoke with all these folks, do they dislike about her?
I got a couple of guesses. One is that she is the establishment. She's run
right.
Germany as chancellor for the last 12 years.
Sure.
But maybe more important, she's one of them. She is one of the folk. She was raised in East Germany.
Huh.
And her party, the Christian Democrats, that is traditionally the party of the right.
And when we say right here, though, we have to clarify that right, I mean, right in the German sense is like sort of...
The Democrats,
yeah,
in the U.S.
far left in the U.S. sense of the word.
But nonetheless, it's the party of the right. And there she is, having betrayed her people, her folk, by bringing in the refugees.
Huh. And presumably Merkel has had some thoughts, like has she spoken about this word Volk and the sort of rise of this like Nazi era language?
Well, it's interesting. She has largely avoided the term and instead substitutes it for another Volk-related word that I mentioned at the top of the pod, Bevölkerung, population, which is a completely neutral term. But there was one time earlier this year that she, by her standards, completely lost it with Pegida and the AfD people over precisely this, the word Volk. It was in a speech after she had been repeatedly criticized for not saying Volk. She started with a bit of recent history. She said how wonderful it was in 1989 when the Iron Curtain fell and Europe grew together. And because of this wonderful moment and coming together, she said, there is absolutely no justification for these small groups, she means the right-wing groups, to assume that they can define who the German folk are. And then she ends with this. The folk is everyone who lives in this country. No restrictions. Anyone. Everyone.
Wow, that's a pretty big statement.
Okay, that's the show for today. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll post some photos from the Dresden Pegida rally.
I hope you got one of the Trump t-shirt with the...
I sure did.
Cowboy hat.
Also, some of the other people I talked with, they'll be at pri.org/language. Tina Tobey mixed this episode. Also, big thanks to Bianca Bader for help with the German language.
Also, thanks to PRI as the World, the very great radio program, where for the next couple of weeks, you can actually hear some reporting out of Germany about the elections and many more things from reporter Daniel Gross. He's there right now doing some stories.
A couple of other thanks to Helmut Kellershohn and Udo Stiel. They helped me understand much more than I did before about the German language and history. And a massive thank you to Frank Hessenland. He co-reported much of this episode with me, asked nearly all of the smart questions, and drove hundreds of miles in the world's most badass gold Mercedes.
Frank.
Dankeschön, dude.
Book recommendations, Patrick.
Yes. Victor Klemperer's diaries, they are one of the most revealing first-hand accounts of life under the Nazis.
Chilling.
Chilling, but fantastic reading. And here's a book that isn't so chilling, but is extremely good and funny. It's a memoir about learning German. It's Rebecca Schumann's Schadenfreude, a Love Story. I read it recently. This is what it's about, just like it says on the front cover. Me, the Germans, and 20 years of attempted transformations, unfortunate communications, and humiliating situations that only they have words for. Only the Germans have words for.
They have great words.
LOL funny.
Patrick, use your internet slang. Check us out at Lingopod. And please, please, if you have the chance, write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you hear us, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, wherever you can write a review, write a review. It really, really helps.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.